This episode of the Pain Education Corner is sponsored by the Camella Foundation. The Camella Foundation is committed to relieving pain naturally using osteopathic healing principles. Here at the Camella Foundation, we envision a world where people achieve their maximum potential by being empowered with knowledge and skills to heal themselves and others. This information is to be used for educational purposes only, and not to be construed as medical advice. If you have any questions or concerns, please consult a licensed healthcare professional. Hello, it's Bill, the Knee Pain Guru with the Camella Foundation, supporting the Pain Education Podcast. Today, we have a good friend of mine. We actually go way back in martial arts. We trained Sistema together, which is a Russian martial art. I have been following his Facebook feed for some time now and seeing how he's really gotten into a movement aspect of healing. There's more to it than just movement, I know. But that's why I wanted to introduce my good friend, Anthony Paul Dowdy. Welcome, Paul. Would you share a little bit about your history and how you got into everything you're doing right now?
Sure. Hey, Bill, thanks for having me on the podcast. It's happy to be here and just happy to spend a little bit more time with you. Oh, man. Well, I'm 49. You know, I've done a whole lot of things in my life. Probably the biggest thing in my life right now is my children. You know, I have two children. They're 10 and 8. And right now, in the last 10 years, my focus for myself personally has been longevity. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean I just want to live a long time. It's, I want to be able to do things for a long time. So I really try to, you know, modify my training and my dietary, you know, life and my whole lifestyle. So not only am I going to be here, but I can be here and do things with my family. And I'd say that probably brings me the greatest joy in my life, be able to go out and do different things with them and being capable. There's the joke at my children's school, their phys ed teacher is constantly like, oh, the Terry Fox run, which is like a race for charity we do here in Canada. And they're like, oh, your dad's going to be here, right? We know he's going to be here. He's going to run with us and he's going to do a really good job. And I'm like, oh, you know, that makes me feel good that, you know, and I get there and it's just a lot of fun. Now,
Paul, let's, because I know we're talking about being a dad, but there's so much more to you that goes back decades.
Yes.
And what I'd like to do is get kind of a snapshot to see that your journey to get to the place where you're at right now as a dad.
Yes.
49 years old. That it just, you just didn't show up today and do that. Like you, when we met, you owned a Kempo school. You were training Kempo and Sistema. Could you kind of give like a little brief snapshot from the experience with the Kempo school? I know the Kempo school is no longer in existence. Is
that's correct.
So there was a big transformation from you, which I think a lot of people, that happens for a lot of people. They think, oh, I'm going in this direction in my life. And all of a sudden life throws them a curveball and it's very different. So can you kind of walk our listeners through like a brief overview of that experience?
Yeah. Well, let's go back to my birth. Long, long time ago. I was born with a congenital heart defect, right? So I had a hole in my heart. One of the tubes from my heart to my lungs too small. I have a heart murmur, a leaky valve, all this sort of stuff. So when I was growing up, I was kind of, it was very, you know, like had to be looked at very carefully, everything I did, monitored. And, you know, physically, I kind of wasn't allowed to do a lot of things a lot of the time. You know, I ended up getting kind of left behind. When I was in grade three, an uncle of mine introduced me to martial arts, Taekwondo at the time. And the doctors were like, yeah, that's a safe thing to do as long as there's no contact. You know, right. Like, okay. You know, but the idea, you know, back then, you know, like doing the forms and doing the training and the cardiovascular work and stuff was considered very healthy. So one, as a, you know, 8-year-old boy, like, woohoo, like, let's get into it. All the ninja movies and stuff. Let's do some martial arts. And the two, my mom was more than happy. My dad was more than happy to support it because it was kind of in the right way. So that was kind of a big part of my life for a long, long time. You know, all through grade school, high school, even when I took a break, couldn't afford it for a while. You know, I kind of still did it on my own. I mean, I ended up doing other things. I ended up getting into bicycling and rollerblading and all sorts of things. But that was kind of my main focus because I was told that was the healthy thing to do. Anything cardiovascular wise was good. And, you know, I was told to avoid certain things and avoid certain foods and everything. I think, though, I had two surgeries. I was like 6 months old and 6 years old at the time. I noticed when I was around 16, I started to have back tightness all the time. I was just like, you know, I couldn't hold a position for very long. It was just, I just felt like there was something in my lower back that was just like slowly kind of forcing me out of position, you know. And it was that way for, oh man, just probably like a good 6 years. That's all it was, this constant thing. And I remember talking to the doctor and, oh, you know, stretch more, you know, that was the, you know, stretch. So I, you know, stretch my back and it would feel good for like 10 seconds, you know, and then it would feel just as bad, if not worse, you know. And then like all the research at the time was like, walk, go for long walks. I'm like, okay, well, I'll go to the walks. I'll walk outside. I'll walk around the mall. And I'm like, man, this is, it would just, walking would fatigue my back of all things. I was like, mm-hmm. This doesn't seem, do I need to do more? You know, do I walk more? I'd be done. I'd be like, man, I need to go lie on the couch and do nothing for a couple hours to recover from walking. And it was like, meanwhile, I'd go to a martial arts class and work my butt off for an hour and a half and be drenched in sweat and, you know, okay, well, that feels better. But again, later on, when I cooled down, things would kind of catch up to me. And I think, oh boy, I was about 22, I'm kind of guessing in there, 22, 23, when I had my first kind of what I call my, like the incident, where like I was lying on the couch, my nephew, who was like a couple months old, was on the floor. And I just turned to reach down and kind of, you know, grab his shoulders and go, goo goo gaga, play with him a little bit. And all of a sudden it was like something snapped. Like, I don't know what, but when I looked, like there was like some chunk and I couldn't walk. Mm. I just really couldn't walk. I just, you know, I couldn't even stand up. I rolled onto the floor and couldn't move really much. And I could crawl around and I was stuck that way for like 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, I ended up going to the emergency hospital. The doctors thought I had, you know, kidney problems, and they did x-rays and they did ultrasound. They're like, nothing's wrong with you. Mm-hmm. Hey, why can't I stand up? Right. And if I do get up, why am I, you know, on this weird angle? Why can't I walk anywhere? Boy, we don't know. So, you know, like that became this massive, massive long journey of finding different things. And, you know, like, again, everything was, okay, you need to do more ab work, you know, work your core. Mm-hmm. More core. Oh, okay, yeah, I'm stronger. Okay, do more walking. Oh, okay, I can walk better, but stretch more. Okay, I mean, eventually I found a chiropractor, and I got really, really lucky because my chiropractor is amazing, Dr. Carolyn Dougherty here in London, and she's not just a chiropractor, you know. Like, so this is like the mid-90s when it was still kind of a spooky thing to go to the chiropractor, and they're just cracking your bones. And she's always been to all sorts of other therapies and making sure, you know, she wanted for me, it's like, okay, I'm going to put you back in position, you know, in layman's terms, but it's up to you to maintain that position. And, you know, and, you know, she had great faith in me because I was, you know, active and stuff. And again, you know, it's been, even to this day, it's still, you know, from 26 to 49, I'll find something that works. It's either always temporary or a small piece of the puzzle, mm-hmm. right? There's never one, you know, I've had, again, more x-rays and more this and more that. And, you know, one of the things I got introduced to Systema, you know, around 2001, 2002, and very, very different, but also not really. It was just human movement, mm-hmm. you know, and I like to emphasize the human movement of that. You know, Vladimir would talk about that. You'll move like a human being, be yourself, be who you're supposed to be. And there was a lot of things I couldn't do that he could do and other people could do. And that lower back thing has always been, I don't think it's ever going to go away. I think mm-hmm. it's going to be with me forever. And again, I think that's why I started in this story with my birth. I still have a scar in my chest that's over a foot long mm-hmm. and an inch and a half wide at one point, mm-hmm. right? And the damage, the long-term effects of my body, especially without ever considering that, you know, are immeasurable. I can never actually say, there's all sorts of new research about fascia and how that affects the body and the imprint it leaves. And, you know, like, even the scar tissue, it's like, oh, it should just be, it's not just on the outside, it's inside, it affects sure. everything. And, you know, I'm doing things now to even just kind of work that scar tissue away, which is funny because I kind of resisted that over the years. I didn't want to make my scar disappear because I didn't want it to be vanity, but I was thinking, well, everything's all connected. So,
sure.
You know, the problem is now I'm talking like, you know, almost 30 years of exploration of how to make me better. And long story short, I don't believe there's ever any just one solution, you know. Right. I mean, sometimes there is, right? You cut your hand in a piece of glass. Well, you take the glass out and you put a Band-Aid on it. Well, okay, that's going to get better. But for most people who are in pain, which is, you know, really, you know, your focus here is, it's a multi-layered, multifaceted thing. It's not just, you know, it's very rarely is it just that one thing. And, you know, all those years of martial arts, all that kickboxing training, you know, everything I was doing for all those years was very much protect that core and get that guard up and make myself smaller, mm-hmm. right? Which I believe was overstretching my back, over lengthening it, and over tightening my core. So I think when I finally started to have back problems, I started stretching the back more because I was told to do that. I started strengthening the core more because I was told to do that. But I think those were part of the problem at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the best lessons I ever learned was from Charles Poliquin, passed away a few years ago, strength and conditioning coach, world renowned, trained many Olympians. I've trained with him a bunch of times. Simple article him and another guy wrote together, and it was so simple, and but at the same time for me more mind-blowing. It was like, well, if you're having back problems, strengthen the back and maybe stretch the core a little bit.
Okay. And
immediately I said, okay, I'm going to try that. So I started doing all sorts of exercises to strengthen my back and all sorts of exercises to stretch out and release things in my core. Game changer. You know, at the time I was lifting weights. I couldn't deadlift. I couldn't even deadlift a plain bar. It was impossible. My back would just, I could not be in the right position that would not cause any sort of pain or things. I just couldn't move. A couple of years ago, I did a wide grip deadlift for 310 pounds.
Wow.
You know, it's not an amazing lift, but for me at age 40, having these back problems all my life, major, major accomplishment.
Sure. So we got extensive martial arts training. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of the Pain Education Corner. If you have a special talent or skill to relieve pain and you'd like to become a guest on our show, visit us at thecamellafoundation.org/interview. Help us spread the word on eliminating pain and suffering in the world. That's thecamellafoundation.org/interview. And you've studied strengthening, stretching as yep. well. Anything else in there that we didn't touch on?
Yeah, well, I like to learn. You know, I even when it came to martial arts, like I've trained in numerous martial arts. Like, I don't even want to talk about how many. And anytime I've gone to a different martial arts, I've always gone in completely as a beginner. It's one of the things, you know, I like being a beginner. I mean, I've gone to classes and they're like, oh, no, Paul, you're a black belt or you're advanced. You should be here. And I'm like, no. I want to see the system. I want to see what I want to start here and build myself up. You know, back in 2000, the whole Taibo, the fitness kickboxing craze was going on, and people were coming to my school like, I want to do that. I'm like, it's not quite what I do. I thought, this is what my clients, my customers, my students want. Well, I figure I better at least learn about it. So at least not. So I took a fitness instructor's course, right? Group fitness instructor's course. And that kind of opened my eyes a little bit just to the kind of a greater, you know, movement and health potential. And that led to some kettlebell certifications. Eventually it led to a personal training certification.
Now I'm getting out of you. Now I'm getting kettlebell certification and all that. It's like you're hiding all this stuff.
Well, it's one of those things sometimes I don't like to talk about because I'm like, some people will like do course after course after course and like, look, my resume looks good. And like, I don't care about my resume. You know, people who want to train with me, they want to train with me because they want to train with me, not because of my certifications. And I like to avoid that. But at the same time, like, yeah, you know, like Charles Pollock used to run a nutritional course called Biosignature. I did that a couple of times with him. You know, amazing stuff. And then I've done the precision nutrition one. In fact, I'm doing the level 2 precision nutrition right now. The functional movement screen, you know, working with those guys has been heavy stuff. But, you know, again, they're all pieces of the puzzle again, right? They're all little things. One of the things is through Charles Poliquin, of all people, I heard of Idal Quartal and his movement culture.
Sure.
I was like, you know, Charles Poliquin was talking about this guy, and I thought, but they're not the same. But so I thought, well, I want to check it out and explore it. I thought, wow, there's something here. And everyone gets something different, you know, from Idal. And what I got was, you know, we need to move. You know, like we're human beings who need to move and we need to move differently, you know, and then we mostly are currently, and we all need different things. And so, you know, through the movement culture, you know, and a lot of online stuff there, you know, I found Animal Flow and I found GMB, Gold Medal Bodies, from Ryan Hirst. And I've taken a bunch of those courses, you know, GMB, I'm actually, you know, certified instructor in them. And a lot of my classes right now, or have been the last couple of years, have been based on you know, their concepts. So it's kind of like fitness classes, but based on movement, as opposed to, you know, let's just do a boot camp, which I hate that term. But let's get you moving better first. You know, like why work on a 200-pound, you know, deadlift or squat if you can't just squat normally, if you can't sit down properly, like. You know, and let's look at the general population, real people, you know, and help them just move better and feel better. And
I think you're bringing up a really good point where I see personally in working with clients, the disconnect.
Yes.
It's like, I can't do a normal squat right, but I'm going to want to load my body up with extra weight and do a heavy squat incorrectly as well. And that's what it leads to injuries on so many levels. Yeah. So I want to get into how movement reduces pain, but I really want to touch on that point. And you're working with clients and students. Speak to that mindset that needs to be, we need to line that up in a way where, how does a person know they're ready to begin to do something more when they aren't even clear that they're not doing it right to begin with?
Yeah, you know, I agree with you so much there. And it's kind of a hard point to talk about because it's going to be different for everyone.
Right.
You know, but one of the things, you know, that so many people now are talking about is play.
Okay.
Right. Can you, as you as an adult, can you play? And I think if you can play and comfortably play, even if it, even if that makes you uncomfortable, but maybe you're ready to do things.
And we're, I think what I hear you saying is different types of uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Some people may physically be able to play, but mentally, emotionally, they think, ah, oh, that's not.
That's weird.
Yeah, that's weird.
That's strange. yeah, I, for about 6 years now, not this past year because of, you know, things going on out there, but for the last 6 years before that, I was teaching group classes at a community center just around the corner from my house. And it's been great. And they originally hired me because they had a class set up, and they had a bunch of classes set up and no instructor because somebody took over. And the manager's daughter knew me from the Y, and she called me up and was like, can you help me out? I'm like, sure, you know, and I was kind of in between things at the time. So the timing was just great, you know, and they wanted me to run a one of the classes was the boot camp class. And I said, well, I don't do a boot camp class. And right. She goes, Paul, I know you, I trust you, I don't care. Just do what you do and I'll be happy.
Sure.
And I did. You know, and you know, 20 adults coming into this class, you know, expecting someone to yell at them and tell them what to do and do all this stuff. And I didn't, you know, we did a 10-minute warm up, gentle, like moving through all the joints, you know, mm-hmm. And I had one guy go, oh my God, this is really intense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, that's not bad. But there's if this warm up is intense, what if I'd thrown you into these traditional boot camp style? Like, what would that have done to you? You know, like,
right.
and then I had this one person go, this is weird. I said, I know. I said, and that's okay. She goes, and then she goes, oh, okay. When I said it was okay, she thought, oh, okay. And then she did it, you know, and not everyone took to it,
sure.
You know, because after the warm up, we're like, well, can you squat? And, you know, oh yeah, I can squat. I said, well, let's do one squat then. We all sat in a squat and then a couple of the people were like, where's the other 50? I'm like, no, we're just going to do one. Let's go for a walk. They're like, what? I said, walking's good. And you know, I had a couple of younger people who just wanted to try something different because it's, you know, a community program. And they're like, Paul, this is awesome.
Yeah.
This is, I don't know what this is, but this is awesome. I said, well, good. I said, you know, everything was, you know, I had a structure, but I had lots of leeway on that structure, and I had a plan, lots of leeway on that plan. You know, we had fun, and I had two girls, you know, both young professionals. You know, they're graduated school, they're in their job. I mean, they ended up bringing their parents.
Mm.
You know, and I had the dad. I said, okay, 5 minutes play time. You're gonna do whatever movements you want for 5 minutes, and the girls who've been with me for a couple months now, they're like, doing some stand, you know, a bear and a frogger and walking and squatting and some other stuff. Well, the dad starts doing handstands,
mm-hmm.
And the daughter goes up to the dad and you know, like, you know, she's like 28 and so I have no idea how old dad is. It doesn't matter, but he's trying to do handstands and the daughter goes up, dad, why are you doing handstand? Don't do that. He looks at me and goes, well, he is. Well, if he's going to try it, I'm going to try it. You know, and he had fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had this one girl come in. I hate to say girl, she's 62.
Okay.
Personal support.
A young lady.
Yes, young lady. 62, you know, and just like awesome, awesome lady, you know, but she was a personal support worker, still going to work, you know, 5 days a week, on her feet the whole time. And she came to my class because her traditional boot camp class was gone. For some reason, the instructor either retired or moved on. I don't remember the full story. And she needed something. And she goes, well, maybe I'll try something different. This looks like it might be different. And for the first couple of weeks, I talked to her friendly, but during class, I could never get a read from her. You know, you're in class sometimes, like, is she enjoying it? Is she liking it? Does she hate it? You know, like, it's just like, oh, I hope she, and you know, and so one day we're after class and we're just chatting a little bit and she just kind of sat down. I was like, okay. And it was obvious she was waiting. I was like, okay, maybe she's going to tell me she hates it, doesn't like it, doesn't want to come back or wants her money. I'm like, okay. So we sat down and talked. She goes, Paul, this is the best thing ever. I'm like, not what I was expecting, you know?
Yeah.
And she goes, I've been doing that traditional boot camp for over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sore every time afterwards, which is something else we need to talk about. I'm like, oh, you know, sorry to hear that. And she goes, but I come into your class, and she goes, I'm always stiff at the beginning. But she goes, when I leave this class, I'm in my car and I'm smiling.
Yeah.
And I feel like I can move better. She goes, I go to work in the morning right now. And I say, I wish I could do Paul's class before going to work. Because, you know, and she goes, you know, one day she's late and she's all apologetic. She's like, oh, I'm sorry. I said, don't need to apologize. No, no. She goes, I'm apologizing to myself because I wanted to be here on time so I can do the warm up. Like, you know, there's power. There's freedom. To me, freedom in being able to play. And
I want to touch on something that I see, and it's kind of that gap between the play and feeling good in the body. And it's the unawareness of the level of self-abuse we put ourselves through. And I know that sounds like a really simple statement there, but it's huge. And I think it's very prevalent in society that people have a self-expectation from whatever reason, whatever it is, and they put themselves through these tasks. You know, I got to do 50 pushups, or I need to do 100 squats, or whatever that is. And it's over this expectation of how many you're supposed to do, yet you're not doing any of them correctly. And you continue to push, or the unawareness of continuing to push through something that is actually dysfunctional for the body.
Yeah. And
this is really going to segue into like the whole thing of movement medicine for painful joints, that we have to start with the right mindset as far as what we're doing. And you're saying it perfectly. If we played and we loosen up like kids do, I mean, it sounds like a shocker, but kids generally don't get hurt like right. Adults do. And I think there's this place where if we take a little pressure off of ourselves and allow ourselves to, we also need the right guidance. Because
yes.
A lot of these echoes in our head of things that have happened in the past, if we're supposed to do those 50 pushups, otherwise we're not going to meet the bar.
Right.
So I think it's a perfect segue to get into the movement as medicine, movement as healing the body, movement as a way of getting the blood flow and the mood elevated and things like that. That's not a beat down. That's right. Not the boot camp. So
one of my big pet peeves is with other personal trainers is when they say like, can you feel the burn? I'm like, I don't want my clients to feel the burn. I always say, it's a bit of a joke, but I say, well, if you can feel the burn, you need to go to a doctor and get that checked out, get some cream or something, you know, like,
sure.
That's so negative, you know, like burn is not a good thing, right. You know, and I hear it all the time.
And I want to make a distinction here because there's a tendency, like there rarely is a middle ground with this. It's like a gutter ball. It's like, okay, you don't feel the burn. Then there's the people that'll be like, oh, well, if I don't push myself, then I'm not improving.
Right.
If I don't push myself, now I'm not getting better. And that's not what you're talking about at all.
Yeah.
There's this, if you're a professional athlete or you're in the military or something like that, where your life and the longevity of your career is dependent on you pushing to extreme limits, different story.
Yes.
But in terms of your average everyday person, that is a parent, that is whatever they're in their life, destroying your body in the process is not gonna, I'm all about pushing.
Yeah.
But if you're pushing to the detriment of your physical body, I don't believe that is, I don't see it making sense.
I think we have a big disconnect too with what pain is versus discomfort.
Okay. You
know, and I think some people today are like, some people are too freaked out with pain that they'll associate discomfort with pain. But then other people, again, two extremes, some people are so used to pain, they think that's normal. They think that's just discomfort, right?
Okay.
And that's just a big, I'd say very Western society disconnect right now. Mm-hmm. And like you said, there's middle grounds and, yeah. and there's individuality. And, you know, like even the military and these Olympic athletes, like they're not going to be an Olympic athlete all their life, right? You're not going to be, right. you're not going to be in the military going on active duty all your life, right? There is a, let's train for a certain period of time to get to a certain level. And if we have to increase that because we're going to war or because I'm going to competition,
right?
And they have injuries, but they also have people who help them and coaches who tell them when to back down and what, you know, what foods to eat and supplements to take and, you know.
Yeah. There's a gentleman who wrote a book. His name is Tony Schwartz. And it's all about training recovery. Everything is about training recovery. Whatever you do, you're doing it to train the recovery of whatever you're doing. And I think that was a game changer for me. Getting out of that mentality that I had to beat myself down in order to feel like I was doing something.
It's funny. I don't know the book. I want to read it now. But one of my big things that I've gotten through all my learning a bunch of years, all of your goals, whether it's put on muscle, fat loss, endurance, healing, none of that happens in the workout. It all happens in the recovery. You know, like you work out, but you need to go recover. So I've had clients who have been in the gym every day for an hour and a half or longer, every day for 16 months. And they're burnt out and they're overweight. I had one client, it was insane. This was at the YMCA here in town. She'd been at the Y for literally 18 months. That's probably why I used that number. Mm-hmm. And the first 6 months, she lost a whole bunch of weight, looked better, felt better. But for the last year until I met her, nothing. Mm-hmm. And she was in there. I kid you not, Bill. I wish I was kidding. An hour and a half every day hitting one of these machines as hard as she can. And mm-hmm. and I'd seen her. She was busting herself. I made her step back. Mm-hmm. I said, no. We're going to lift a little bit of weights, you know, light, you know, not lightweight per se, but like not intense. It's going to be, you know, I said, we're not going to do any cardio for like a month or two. I want you to, you can do as many yoga classes that you, if you need to be here every day, go to the yoga classes. Mm-hmm. And I think I had her change like one small thing in her diet. You know, she came back 2 weeks later. She goes, Paul, I lost 5 pounds. So I haven't lost any weight in a year. And I'm like, okay, did all my changes make her lose those 5 pounds? No, I believe I eliminated a whole bunch of stress that she was under. She was never recovering.
She was hitting her adrenals really hard. Yeah. Okay, that book, The Power of Full Engagement. Tony Schwartz, The Power of Full Engagement.
Writing that down.
Yeah. I told you, Paul, this would be fun, like you and I hanging out talking. Because, I mean, I realize I just am surrounded by really cool, interesting people that just love learning. So anyhow, yeah, this is great. So Tony Schwartz has several books. I brought up a website here. The way we're working isn't working. What really matters, and his most recent book is Dealing with the Devil. I haven't read those other books. I read The Power of Full Engagement, and it was just a great book.
Yes,
really of. Basically batching what you're working on. So you aren't doing like the marathon exercise routine or work day or whatever it is. You batch things. You batch things in manageable levels.
Yep.
And you can get things done because you never fully deplete yourself in the process.
Right.
And it's going to feel weird when you first start doing it because... well, I'm not kicking my own butt in the process. I'm actually like, oh, well, I still could do more. And that's the key. It's like a battery. If you drain the top portion of a battery, the battery in your car, I'm talking about, the alternator will charge it back up. But if you fully deplete the battery, it takes forever for it to charge back up.
I had a client, good friend of mine. He's been with me for years. He martial art client first, fitness client. He got into marathon running. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's done a bunch of full marathons. He's done the Chicago one. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he wanted to go back and do it again a couple of years ago. And he's like, he goes, something I'm doing is not working. And he goes, Paul, I like what you've been saying about some of this other stuff. So can you help me out? So we ended up dropping a lot of things, you know, and trying to get him to drop the running for a while. But we got him some weight training. I tried to get him to put on some weight, you know, and it all worked out. And he ended up running a good time, not mm-hmm. necessarily his best time. Mm-hmm. Two years later, he goes, Paul, I want to do that again because I want to start earlier. I said, good. I said, we didn't have enough time last year. So we started, you know, the run was in October. We started back in January. But again, first thing I did, I eliminated all the running to start with because he was addicted to that running. You know, mm-hmm. he was at one point, him and his one buddy, they were running 7 days a week.
Whoa.
It's just like, yeah. Your body's never recovering. You're never giving any different stimulus. Anyways, long story short, 2 years ago, last time he ran his best marathon ever, you know, at 53 years of age. Mm-hmm. And when his training cycle was only, his marathon training cycle was only 16 weeks long, only running three times a week. Mm-hmm. You know, like we played with that a little bit and gave him some different things. He had a plan and it was completely unlike anything he'd ever done. And like, he was so happy, you know, he mm-hmm. just couldn't believe it. I was just like, yeah.
Yeah. It just goes to prove it. It's like a lot of times we're actually beating ourselves down in the process of achieving the thing that we want.
Yeah.
We're closer than we think. And it's a mindset shift to realize that we could actually feel better. We in less time, energy, and effort, if we stop the abuse in the process, the self-abuse in the process.
And to go a little off topic, I think some of this has to do with unfortunately how the last 60 years we've been viewing food, mm-hmm. you know, or food like products. You know, so there's like, we just currently we have this big thing with food and really at the end of the day, so many people are still like, oh, I ate a cookie. Like you were saying earlier, I need to do 50 pushups now. Or, well, I had a bad meal last week. I need to work extra hard here. Or like, it just that ill association between, well, I did this, it's bad, I need to do this, this is good, has just created this massive, you know, misalignment with our thinking and our relationship with food and movement and exercise and activity that, yeah.
Okay, this brings up a good point that I want to ask you about. And I think it points to people being honest with themselves. Because there's that place where you did the thing that isn't so good for you. You don't want to beat yourself up in the process. However, you still want to be honest with yourself that you could do better, that you can improve from it. So there's a tendency sometimes for people to go, oh, well, I just had that bowl of ice cream. I might as well finish off the rest of the half a gallon. You know, so it's like, how do you speak to that discrepancy in the psychology that ends up in health and fitness and things like that?
It's at the end of the day, the biggest thing is trying to convince my clients not to beat themselves up either way, you know, like, because then it just creates a negative feedback loop.
Right.
And it's like, okay, you had the ice cream. Good. Did you enjoy it? Good. Did you not enjoy it? Oh, well, next time have it. Next time enjoy it more. Let's create a positive.
I didn't enjoy it. Yeah. Afterwards, yeah. I didn't enjoy
it. If you're going to have it anyway, you might as well enjoy it and get rid of that negative feeling, get rid of that negative association.
Right.
You know, and then it all depends on the client. How ready are they to change? And it's ready is not necessarily mean willing, because mm-hmm. most clients come in, they're like, oh, I ate a tub of ice cream. Most of them don't want to eat a tub of ice cream. But is there something else that's driving it? Like, you know, mm-hmm. how bad a day are they having, and how what aspects of their life up until that bad day have been controlling that, you know? And
sure.
And then that it's probably a habit. You know, very few people make a conscious decision. No, I feel kind of crappy today. I need to think of ice cream. No, it's a feeling. They're experiencing it, and they need to quench that feeling, right? Because it's so overwhelming. Well, and that's something. It's a tool. Eating is that way is a tool like anything else, and it can be a real positive tool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but
yeah, that, I think there's distinctions and nuances that we're bringing into the conversation here. What is the ice cream feeding that isn't being addressed in a healthy way in the person's life?
Right.
It could be movement. It could be sleep. It could be nutrition. It could be emotional stuff that's going on. So we're looking at, instead of us putting in, okay, I'm going to exercise now. I go to sleep, going to eat, going to work. And now we're looking at all of these distinctions and nuances in a person's life to be like, well, maybe they need to go for a walk. Maybe that would make them feel better. Or maybe if they played, like that type of movement where it helps their physical body, and now they don't want the ice cream. There's a aspect of us that we've lost touch with those distinctions and nuances, and we put things into big categories. And if they don't fit into those big categories, there's like a short circuit in the nervous system where they're going, I'll just eat have a tub of ice cream.
A lot of times people will talk about, you know, human beings in general, and it's we're inherently lazy, right? We want to take the path of least resistance. I don't like to use that. That's so negative, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't think we're lazy, but I do think we're efficient. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd like to find things that are efficient because you know, it works out better that way. And sometimes efficient seems like the path of least resistance. And, you know, it's easy to go that way. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. It just means that's what's led us to here. And if we're going to change that, if you want to change that, right? If you see that as a problem, and then you want to change that, you need to recognize it as a problem first. If it is, you need to want to change it next. You know, and then you need to find the right way that's going to work for you. Mm-hmm. You know, and it might be as simple like, okay, go for a 2-minute walk before you have the ice cream. For some people, done. Like suddenly they either won't have it or they won't eat as much. Or real simple is like, well, you're right there. You're in the kitchen. You're about to get the ice cream. Eat an apple first. Mm-hmm. Still eat your ice cream, but eat that apple first. Mm-hmm. And again, sometimes it'll change nothing, but sometimes it'll change everything. Mm-hmm. And if I can find the path of least resistance for that client,
sure.
What's the best way? What can we change? What do you want? What will work? Then we can start rebuilding, you know, to where we want to be.
Yeah. And generally that thing is easy.
Yeah.
It's easy. It's super easy. And it points to what we're not seeing because it's falling in a blind spot.
Yeah.
That's.
Well, sometimes, like you said, it's so easy. We don't accept it or we can't see it.
We were talking about this right before we started.
It's
right at the tip of my tongue. Oh, the person who was like, you know, calling me Captain Obvious because of like, if we put the knee in a position of comfort, it'll heal.
Yeah.
And the guy was like going, well, yeah, duh.
And you're like, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, if it was that obvious, then why aren't more people doing it? Why are so many people limping around with knee pain? So, yeah, that's so. Well, cool. Let's see. What else are we going to chat about today here, Paul? We've kind of covered big pitfalls people make in regards to pain. So someone suffering in pain, what do you think would be the biggest difference, needle mover?
Yeah. You know,
I know that's
such a broad.
I'm really throwing it out there.
For me, as someone who's trying to help that person, I need to consider so much. but more importantly, I need to consider the person. And one of the simple things I can do is, of course, is have a network of other professionals, you know, mm-hmm. physiotherapists, which I have a couple, a chiropractor, which I have a couple, massage therapists, you know, I've referred a couple, you know, friends and clients of mine to your website, Knee Pain Guru, because of like, you know, they had knee pain that no one knew what the cause was. Well,
right.
You know, I've had clients who've had knee pain. I said, well, okay, let's try this. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's helped and sometimes it hasn't. And it's like, okay, well, you know, it's discovering, is it pain? Okay. Cause if it's real pain, that can be a very serious thing. We need to make sure we don't make mm-hmm. it worse. Is it discomfort? You know, I've had some people just lose that connection. Like, oh, you know, I have this pain, you know, in my knee when I do this. I said, okay, well, is it in your knee? Well, no, it's like a couple inches above my knee. Right. You know, I'm like, okay, well, it could be, you know, a muscle tightness, right? It could be the fascia being all bound up on there. You know, I've had some people go, oh, I can't squat because of my knees. I'm like, oh, okay. Do you want to try this? Do you want, like, working with them, like, what are you comfortable with trying? And I say, well, you don't have to squat. Right? But if you want to try it, you know, we're on it to get, and some people like never go down even halfway. And I've had some people 6 weeks later, they're like three quarters of the way down to a proper squat and they couldn't go halfway before. And,
right.
You know, talk, that's the thing. Talk to the professionals that, you know, mm-hmm. you know, like, don't, again, every class, anyone have any injuries I need to know about today?
Sure.
Right. And maybe I have one person say something. Mm-hmm. And then usually halfway through class or the end of class or 6 weeks into classes, oh, yeah, you know, Paul, I've been experiencing back pain for the last 6 years. Or, oh, I had a shoulder injury. I'm like, you didn't tell me about this before?
Yeah.
Like, so share the information you have. Mm-hmm. Write it down. Journal it. There's so much power in writing things down.
I think there's a point of collecting information, gathering information to understand what is the path to move forward in. And many times I see people taking action when they don't even have enough information yet.
Right.
They're reacting and they're immediately doing something that many times, I'd say 99 times out of 100, that they're making the situation worse by acting without the full amount of information, which is why you ask at the beginning of the class, does anybody have an injury? You're trying to gather the information to know how to guide the class, because you certainly don't want to make somebody do push-ups if they got a shoulder issue that you don't know about.
The other thing too is, this is kind of going back a little bit earlier, but really goes on with you as well, as being, I was talking earlier about people are being like being efficient. And, and one of the things that can be negative with that is that when people do find something, whether it's yoga, running marathons, bodybuilding, martial arts, we tend to find, as a species, we tend to find something that either works for us or that we like, and then suddenly that's what we do. That's who we are.
Right.
You know, like there's the yoga person who's been doing yoga all their life because they didn't like anything else. There's the bodybuilder who, as a teenager, found this out and has been doing it for, you know, there's the marathon, and that leads to a host of other problems. You know, I mean, repetitive strain injuries being the most obvious,
right.
But you know, muscle imbalances being, you know, something to look at. So when it comes to my philosophy on people training now, I say, well, let's find two things. Like, let's find something you like. You like yoga? Okay, do yoga, right? Because you like it, you're probably going to do it, right? You're going to,
right?
But let's find something else. And if you're ready for it, I really encourage, find something you don't like. Because then you got to ask yourself, why don't you like it? Well, I hate lifting weights. I hate doing any bodyweight exercise. Why not? Well, I'm not good at it. Okay. Well, there's nothing, especially working with women, I say there's nothing wrong with being strong.
Mm-hmm.
What? You don't have to put on big muscles, but you can still get strong, and being strong is a good thing. Oh, and there's nothing, you know, like, find something you enjoy because you're going to do it, but find something you maybe don't enjoy and at least try it out. Give it a chance. and see if it starts fixing some of these other issues, right? Finding that balance. And the thing with balance isn't always 50-50, right? It doesn't mean you're going to do yoga half the time and weightlifting half the time. Those are just two examples. It might mean like, well, you know, I've been doing yoga 90% of the time and I've never done weightlifting. I might need to weightlift or body weight train or do, I might need to do this like 4 or 5 days a week for like 3-4 months or a year to kind of counter some of this other thing. Or I've never run to the store, let alone a marathon. Well, maybe I should play with some cardio. Or, you know, I've never done a squat in my life, or I've never walked on my hands. Well, maybe we should, you know, and working with adults, usually it's easy to find what they haven't done yet, right? Mm-hmm. It's easy, like it's, you're a runner, you're a yoga person. Well, let's do some weight training. You're a weight trainer, let's do, it's, I also work with children a lot. I've done a lot of children's classes, which is a lot of fun. And for them, I do everything, mm-hmm. right? Because they don't need necessarily a structured program, because they're probably mostly playing on their own, doing everything already. But working with adults, especially in pain, it's like, well, again, you've probably found something that may have temporarily worked, like stretching for me. Everyone told me stretch. So and it felt better for 30 seconds to 15 minutes for a day, and then it would come back worse. And I found something different that I wasn't doing, and it helped. Mm-hmm. They didn't cure it, but it helped. So,
right.
And again, that's where play comes into it.
Right.
Right. Let's play with some different things. Does it make you uncomfortable? Yes, that's okay. You're allowed to be uncomfortable. You're allowed to have that feeling. Doesn't mean you have to discount it though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Paul, we're going to wrap it up here in a little bit. You have some bonus stuff you're going to share with us. We're going to have a button down below this podcast on the Camella Foundation website. Can you give us a little teaser of what we might be seeing?
Yeah, basically anyone who wants to work with me, if they're so interested, best way to get a hold of me is just through my email address. It's just easiest, most efficient way. AP, my initials, AP Dottie, Dawdy at hotmail.com.
Mm-hmm. We'll have all your contact information below there.
Perfect. Anyone who wants to contact me and wants to chat, you know, I'm happy to give two live Zoom sessions, because we're really not meeting in person right now, and discuss your needs and your wants, right? They're both important. And we can do some talking, but we can also look at some of your movement patterns and stuff while we're doing that. Also, if anyone's interested in doing more than that, I do a lot of my programming through an app called Just Coach. Mm-hmm. And downloading the app is free, you know, mm-hmm. whether through Google or the Apple. And then I can put you on as a client, and you put me on as your coach. And I have a 2-week program that I can set up for you, mm-hmm. no charge, you know, after we've talked, to make sure we can find something that will work for you.
And are we going to be able to get maybe a 10-15 minute clip of you teaching a class or something that we could throw up on the website?
You know what? I've never actually done anything like that, but I would be happy to do so.
I've seen, the reason why I'm asking is because I've seen you post stuff on your Facebook page. So I was like, oh, that'd be really cool to do some sort of movement thing, like a warm up, maybe an example of the play that you're talking about in a class. It doesn't even have to even be you. It's like, how are your students? What are you talking about as far as play? Because it could be a little ambiguous for someone who hadn't seen it before. So I think that'd be cool. And what we'll do is included with all of your contact information and the app you were referring to, and to set up times to speak with you, we'll have information where they can go to this clip, what you would have to share with them.
Yeah. I've got a few things currently on YouTube that they're usually in private and stuff. Through some of my certifications, I've had to film myself and put them up there, so I can definitely give access to those. Yeah. And I'm sure I could also film something else as well. So yeah, happy to put that together for sure.
Perfect. Cool.
And if anyone has any suggestions of what they want to see, but you know, like, you know, I'll be open to suggestions too. And I can put something out there for sure.
Awesome. Is there anything else you want to share that's kind of like sticking out in the back of your back of your head that's like we didn't cover today?
Yeah, nothing specific that we didn't cover. It's more like, you know, don't give up. You know, like we all have reasons in our life for doing things, and really just don't give up. And it's also, it's never too late. You know, there's, you may not find the solution, but you might find a piece of the puzzle and explore, and, you know, try not to go into the rabbit hole of, you know, and try not to get married to some, you know, some guru, some doctrine or something like that. But let's find something for you. Don't give up. And, you know, one step better is better than stagnating and falling backwards.
Absolutely. Paul, I want to thank you so much for being here. Thank you for chatting with me today. Once again, we'll have all that contact information down below. One last thing you'd like to say before we wrap this up?
You know, totally my pleasure. This was very relaxed, a lot of actually fun. I appreciate you bringing me on here. I really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
Great. Paul, thank you for being here. This is Bill Paravano, the Knee Pain Guru, going to wrap it up for the Pain Education Podcast today, sponsored by the Camilla Foundation. And thank you so much. We will see you on the next one. To learn more about the work we do at the Camilla Foundation, please visit our website at the Camilla, C-O-M-E-L-L-A, foundation.org. Join us next week for another conversation on natural healing methods to eliminate pain.